this is the Angry Gem, and this is a proofread aloud. This one is not being recorded live. This is just being recorded between you and me and Biscuit here in the privacy of the Angry GM studio recording place, whatever. Yeah, okay. So I got to turn up the mic here a little bit. I guess I should stop and start recording again, but, you know, it's good old one take angry here again. So we're proofreading aloud, proofread alouding, proofing, reading, alouding. An article entitled, There's No Such Thing as a Skill Challenge. I'm going to skip the long, rambling introduction, trademark, in favor of a short warning. This is a random bullshit article. So it's basically one long, rambling introduction. Just a big old bloggy rant where I think through and type through a thing. Way more stream of consciousness than my usual crap. And I have no idea where it'll go, let alone whether it'll go somewhere useful. That's my standard random bullshit warning. But I should add a little note. The fact that you're seeing this shit means it does go somewhere useful, or at least it goes somewhere interesting, in my opinion anyway. Because I do have standards, even for ranty, bloggy bullshit. There are actually some bullshit articles you've never seen, and you'll probably never see them. Because after I wrote them, I realized they were neither interesting nor useful. They were just kind of shit. So I trashed them and wrote something else instead. The point is, while I have no idea where this shit's going to end up now, as I'm writing it, I now know it did go somewhere because you're reading it. And look at that. I did manage to include a long rambling introduction, trademark. Go me. Anyway, skill challenges shouldn't exist. If you're one of those smart souls who skip the long rambling introductions, trademark, just know today's feature is a random bullshit. If you're one of those smart souls who skip the long rambling introductions, trademark, just know today's feature is a random bullshit article. A random bloggy stream of consciousness pile of crap as I think through something and invite you along for the ride through my addled brain space. Today, my addled brain space is all about skill challenges and how they don't exist, which is something I've wanted to say, scream really, for a while. But I couldn't figure out quite how to scream it. That's another thing I use these bullshit articles for, by the way. To scream and rant about shit when I'm not sure where to start or what I'm actually mad about. Skill challenges. They don't exist. Stop pretending they do. There. That's a good start. Except it's probably left you all saying, wait, what? If you're a recent addition to this little hobby of ours and D&D 5e is the only D&D you've ever known, you've probably never heard of skill challenges. And if you're not in gaming diapers anymore and getting into your gaming tweens, or way, way, way beyond your tweens like me, then you're probably saying, of course skill challenges don't exist. D&D 4e is dead as a doorstop. Didn't you get the memo, angry? Well, I did, but apparently none of you did. Okay, let me start making some sense. The skill challenge was this mechanical thing invented for Dungeons & Dragons 4th edition. And like so many creative ideas from 4E, the skill challenge was dragged on stage and brutally executed to prove to everyone that 5E was really the best and only D&D. I'm not saying skill challenges were good ideas, mind you, just that they were a clever, creative, and innovative attempt to solve a problem. Not the problem, a problem. Actually, I think they were shit. As far as you probably guessed from the title of this article. So why am I talking about failed mechanics that got flushed away with all the other crap from the failest edition of D&D ever published? Because I've noticed something you GMs are doing when you're writing homebrew adventures and designing encounters. From my hiding place in the azalea bushes, right outside your window. You all keep making skill challenges. Skill challenges in everything but name. A skill challenge was a way of designing a non-combat encounter, and when the designers talked about them in the months leading up to 4E's release, lots of us GMs got pretty damned excited about them. And then the 4E core rulebooks came out, all on the same day, another idea the 5e team jettisoned. And then the 4e rulebooks came out, and we GMs got to see the skill challenge rules. And we GMs got a sick feeling in our collective GMing guts. Some of us did, anyway. The smart ones. Some GMs loved them, but the rest of us knew something was off. Really, really off. The design was simple enough. You, the GM, created a challenging situation and figured out the skills the PCs could use to overcome it. You assigned those skills DCs. As the players used their skills to overcome the challenge, they accumulated successes and failures. If they got so many successes before they got too many failures, they overcame the challenge. If they didn't, they didn't. They failed. Conceptually, it's a neat idea. So neat, it helped inspire the whatever stat I invented, along with the encounter progress system from the failed third edition of Warhammer Fantasy role-playing game. Man, did that poor maligned version of Warhammer Fantasy role-playing game have the best treatment of gameplay and narrative structure and pacing I'd ever seen in an RPG. What a shame the rest of the game was crap. That is a long sentence. Man. Yeah, okay. Conceptually, it's a neat idea. Sip of coffee first. Yeah, okay. Conceptually, it's a neat idea. So neat, it helped inspire the whatever stat I invented, along with the encounter progress system from the failed third edition of the Warhammer Fantasy role-playing game. Man, did that poor maligned version of Warhammer Fantasy role-playing game have the best treatment of gameplay and narrative structure and pacing I'd ever seen in an RPG? What a shame the rest of the game was crap. Anyway, anyone who played D&D 4E will tell you the big problem with skill challenges was the way they punished failed actions and thereby disincentivized. Anyone who played D&D 4E will tell you the big problem with skill challenges was the way they punished failed actions and thereby disincentivized all but the characters with the best skill modifiers from participating. Which just goes to show you why you shouldn't listen to anyone who isn't me, because that's a wrong, stupid take. The problem with skill challenges was that they played like shit. However the GM built them, however he presented them, at the table it was just the players picking actions from a list and trying to roll more successes than failures. Didn't matter what the players were doing. Whether they were disarming traps in the undervaults of Gardmore Abbey, negotiating a peace treaty with the elves of Harkin Forest, or tracking orc savages across the Grey Downs, it was all just picking skills, rolling dice, and accumulating successes. If you're a fan of my work, you know that shit's wrong. Maybe you can't explain why, but you know it. But if you're a fan of my work, the odds are high that you've built a few skill challenges of your own, or asked me to build you one. While the skill challenge is gone from the pages of D&D 5e, it's gone in name only. The design philosophy underlying them is still there, and it's infected other games too. You can find it, for example, in the latest Savage Worlds, just under a different name. And that's a bad thing because, while the idea behind skill challenges was actually really good, the design philosophy that enabled them is nothing but problematic. Say you're making a social encounter. An NPC has information the PCs need. They don't want to give it up. What do? Well, you figure the players can either persuade the dude, intimidate them, or deceive them. You set a few DCs, and then you decide how many successful attempts before the guy caves, right? What about a complex trap? The PCs are locked in a room as it fills with acid, or scorpions, or acid scorpions, or whatever. The party can disarm the trap, or pick the door lock, or break the door down, making saving throws all the while. So, again, you set the DCs, decide how many disarms it takes to really disarm the trap, and how many breaks it takes before the door's broke, and you're done. How else are you gonna do this shit anyway? But you see it, right? You're just building skill challenges. They're not called that, but they are that. And who am I to talk anyway? Because my brilliant invented mechanics, like my interaction encounter rules and my whatever stat, they're basically all the same shit, just a way of keeping score. Except they're not. And it's down to a very minor, but incredibly important, bit of GMing philosophy I've carried with me from the halcyon days of my angry youth. Back in those early days, back before D&D 3E revolutionized everything with its core D20 mechanic, back in those early days, and I mean that literally, by the way, the D20 mechanic was brilliant and revolutionary and it changed everything for the better. back in those early days, we didn't actually have a lot of game mechanics. D&D had very few mechanical rules and tools, and each was highly specific. We had specific rules for attacking with weapons, opening stuck doors, sniffing out secret doors, and lifting heavy iron portcullises. Seriously, we had a rule for each of those situations, a different rule for each. What we didn't have rules for? Basically every general thing that wasn't one of those very specific things. Yeah, AD&D 1E had some rudimentary ability check rules, but they were rarely used. And AD&D 2E had an optional skill system. Two different optional skill systems, but they were also pretty highly specific. There weren't any open-ended skills like athletics and stealth that covered 1,000 different situations each. So, we had to wing it. Mostly what we did was describe situations, however we imagined them, and then listen to what our players said that their characters did, and then decided, okay, that needs to be a couple of sentences. Then we decided how that shit worked out. If we couldn't just figure it out, we usually just assigned a semi-arbitrary percentage chance and rolled it out. Let me be clear, and piss off all my OSR friends as much as I piss off my modern D&D friends. Let me be clear, I am not advocating that mechanical design. It ain't the ideal to strive for. It's got problems. But I think we've gone too far in the other direction. Honestly, in this very specific case, I think D&D 3E hit the sweet spot for this shit. Design a single mechanic to resolve any general action, and let the GM use that tool to resolve everything and anything the players think of. And let me be clear, I'm not saying D&D 3E, or 3.5 or whatever, is the pinnacle of RPG design. Personally, I have managed to convince myself it's the single best designed edition of D&D so far, but it is also deeply flawed in very big ways, and there's lots of shit you've just got to ignore to get a good game out of it. But the ratio of good design to crap design is really high in D&D 3E. It also had the single best Dungeon Master's Guide of any... D&D edition ever, with D&D 4E's ironically being the second best. Enough edition warring, though. This is about game design philosophy. See, it's taken me a while to work out what really bothers me about skill challenges, including the modern skill challenges in all but name that keep cropping up in D&D 5e modules, and that GMs seem to keep designing without realizing. And what I figured out is that it's all about design philosophy. It's about designing mechanics in terms of action resolution. Nah, didn't think I'd say that, did you? Because I just got done praying Messrs. Cook, Tweet, and Williams for their brilliant universal action resolution mechanic. But that's really the key to the whole thing. One thing D&D 3E gets a lot of flack for was that it had a stat block for absolutely effing everything. Every NPC was a fully realized, fully statted character. Every town had a stat block. Every trap. Everything had a stat block. Let me be clear, I'm not saying everything should or should not have a stat block. I'm not advocating a position. But if you look very carefully at the D&D 3.5 stat blocks, one subtle thing you might notice is they're really descriptive. In fact, they're description-based instead of action-based. What's that shit mean? Well, take an NPC, for example. Any NPC. Because it didn't matter what the NPC was doing in the game. The NPC's stat block told you how strong they were, how smart they were, what they knew, how they'd been trained, what they owned, and so on. The stat blocks didn't exist so you could resolve actions. They existed to fully describe the NPC in the world. Again, I'm not saying I support that approach, but the philosophy behind the approach is very important. It was the same with traps. Yeah, traps had DCs to describe how hard they were to find and sabotage. You need that shit. But they also had details about how the trap was triggered, how it could be reset or repaired, how it could be bypassed by the folks who set it up, and so on. A trap stat block provided a complete mechanical description of a trap in the world. It didn't just say, if a player does this, the trap does that. Hell, the trap building section of the DMG almost made the GM construct the trap like a craftsman instead of a game designer. Consequently, all this shit left the GM with a fairly complete mechanical picture of whatever situation the idiot players had gotten themselves into. So the GM could deal with what... I just had one of those moments of panic where I thought I hadn't hit record. And had to go check, and it is actually recording. And I don't know why I had that moment to panic. I'm a little out of it right now. Don't mind me. Consequently, all this shit left the GM with a fairly complete mechanical picture of whatever situation the idiot players had gotten themselves into. So the GM could deal with whatever idiotic thing the players did in response, more or less. Look again at the whatever stat I invented. Sure, it's just an arbitrary 1 to 10 scale that measures closeness to winning or losing, right? How close the players are to getting the NPC to cooperate, or driving them, or driving them to slam the door in their faces. But is it? Is it really? The most important part of the whatever stat ain't the number, it's the name. The whatever stat must measure something that exists in the world, like the NPC's patience, or the guard's alertness, or the ritual's closeness to completion. And there's no if-then relationship between the player's actions and the whatever stat. It's not when the players take an action, the score changes. It's when something happens to change the score changes. The whatever stat describes a specific world state. And the GM can use it to track the impact of any event or action or whatever on that world state. It's a descriptive mechanic. And even though from a tactical standpoint, it does often work out to play as accumulate X successes before Y failures, it's subtly but importantly different. Skill challenges aren't descriptive. They're a bunch of if-then conditionals. If the players use this skill, they score a success or a failure. If they score this many failures, they lose. If they score this many successes first, they win. It doesn't matter what the skill challenge describes. If the players roll the right skills, they win or lose, whatever. You can't run a whatever stat encounter without knowing what it describes because you, the GM, have to decide what impact any given event has on the actual in-world thing the whatever stat describes. It's the same with my social interaction rules, which are just a bunch of nested whatever stats. Objections and motivations, measurements of the emotional shit in the NPC's head. The players can push and pull on those things, but it's down to you to decide when they're doing so and how it affects them. In a social skill challenge, the players can persuade or intimidate or deceive. In an angry skill challenge, the players can bully the NPCs, kidnap and threaten their pets, bribe them, or bring them a piece of their favorite cake. I trust the GM to adjudicate the actions. I'm trying to describe the situation well enough to empower the GM to adjudicate. One of the most subtle indicators of the action-first approach to RPG design in D&D is buried in the word choice. All the published shit, the rulebooks and modules and everything, everything's written in an active, second-person voice. The rulebooks are always talking to you, and they're talking about what happens when you do things. Sometimes they're talking to you, the player, and sometimes they're talking to you, the GM, and sometimes they're talking to you, the GM, about what the players do, but they're always talking to you, and they're always talking about you doing something. And that's why GMs can't design non-combat encounters, and why players don't take creative actions, and why GMs complain that players won't ever take creative actions. A while ago, for instance, I mentioned using quicksand as a wilderness hazard, just in passing, and people lost their shit. How the hell would you design an encounter with quicksand? They screamed. So I wrote a whole article about that shit without ever really understanding where the communication broke down in the first place. I get it now. If you look very carefully at that article, while I do talk about how I'd resolve some specific actions, I mostly just described quicksand and translated the description into mechanics. GMs these days think designing encounters is about figuring out how the players can overcome a challenge. That is, if you want to design a quicksand challenge, you decide how it responds to what the players do, and what happens when the players use their skills on it. But if you look carefully back at that article, you might notice that what I was mostly doing was just describing quicksand. I'm saying the same thing that I said in that previous little two-sentence paragraph fragment, so we'll get rid of the two-sentence paragraph fragment. Okay. But if you look carefully back at that article, you might notice that what I was mostly doing was just describing quicksand. Now, sure, I mentioned how I might resolve some specific game mechanical actions, but mostly it was just describe the quicksand, see what happens, adjudicate that shit. And as the quicksand incident demonstrates, this ain't just philosophy. The whole description first versus action first thing has important practical consequences. If you design an action first challenge, if you design a problem and then a series of actions to overcome that problem, you're not building a problem, you're building a puzzle. Ha! Didn't think I'd say that, did you? You thought I was going to say something about inflexible design, right? And how it was at odds with the open-endedness that RPGs promise? Well, that shit ain't untrue, but it ain't the whole answer. A puzzle is a thing with a correct answer. The players have to pick the right skills and use those skills to accumulate successes. A problem is a thing with no correct answers. The players have to creatively apply their skills, tools, and resources. Problems don't have correct answers. They have possible solutions. The more, the better. A good GM can design puzzles and still be all flexible and open-ended and shit. Good GMs are open to the idea of alternate solutions. They let the players succeed in lots of different ways. But puzzles are still bad design. Because puzzles are dealt with through the application of a few core skills, abilities, and actions, they don't demand any creativity. They will, ipso facto, be soluble with the shit on the character sheet. If all you do is create a problem and describe it, especially if you're careful to use the minimum number of mechanics you need to describe it, your problems won't be limited to shit that two skills can fix. Describe the quicksand. How big is the patch? How deep? What does it do? How hard is it to spot? Done. Good. I, personally, don't give a crap about how my players deal with the shit I throw in my game. If they get lucky, or they're alert and cautious, then yeah, the quicksand pit's just a hazard they spot and walk around. If they miss it and someone blunders into it, maybe all the players will do is throw in a rope and drag them out. Or maybe they'll panic because they don't have a rope and they'll suffocate and die. I don't care. By the way, there's a whole separate thing here about game balance and whether shit is challenging enough to count. GMs get way too bogged down in that bullshit. Lots of GMs won't ever use quicksand because if everything works out perfectly, it takes 10 minutes of playtime for the players to spot it and walk around it. Those are the same GMs who can't figure out how to do anything that isn't combat. Idiots. My point is, when you design a challenge, your job's to describe the challenge, using the bare minimum number of descriptive game mechanics you need, and nothing else. When you're running the challenge, your job is to describe the challenge, listen to the players, and use the mechanics you've got to work out how shit plays out. That's how you design good non-combat encounters and interesting situations, and you don't need a lot of game mechanics to do that, especially given you can pull an ability check and a DC out of your ass whenever you have to. It's harder than it sounds, though, because D&D 5e doesn't want you doing that. Its language and mechanics are designed around handling what the players do, not describing the world. So it feels wrong to stop at describing the world. So let me give you some homework so you can practice this shit. Seriously, homework. I want you to design 3 non-combat encounters, 1 trap, 1 social encounter, and 1 hazard or obstacle. Describe them in terms, or design them in terms of describing them. Not in terms of overcoming them. And to make sure you do that, there are 2 rules. First, you must use a third-person omniscient narrator voice, the voice of God talking about the world. No talking to the GM about the players. Second, you must design the encounter to work in any game system. You must design system-agnostic challenges. This means you're not allowed to use any mechanics at all. The closest you can come is saying something is easy or difficult. Let me be clear. I'm not advocating system agnostic design. It ain't the best approach or even a good approach. You should design your shit for specific systems and settings. They're always better that way. But system agnostic design is a good way to practice description first design rather than action first design. Now, let me be clear. Get out of here and go do your homework. And with that, that is the proofread aloud done, and clicky stop, and then...